Scripture reading is Daniel chapter 6, verses 1 through 9. Daniel 6, 1 through 9. I'll be reading out of the Old King James. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and that the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, forasmuch as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said unto him, "King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes and the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it may not be changed, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not." Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree.
Daniel in the lions, then, is more than just a story that we teach our little ones. Daniel in the lions, then. There's a lot of good things that we need to think about as we consider the text of Daniel chapter 6. Daniel is an impressive character, not only because of the faith that he had, but because of who he was, the position that he had in the courts of King Nebuchadnezzar, and then ultimately, as we will note in the last verse of this chapter, in the courts of King Cyrus, as he ruled over the Medo-Persian Empire. When we as young people look at Daniel, we ought to be inspired because of who he was and the great faith that he had. Some suppose that when he was taken captive from the city of Jerusalem by the Babylonians, he's referred to as a youth, that he was perhaps 15, 17, thereabouts years old. But when we consider Daniel, he was not just a young man, as we see that his position in captivity carried him through until the time of Cyrus. Now, considering that the period of captivity was prophesied by Jeremiah to be 70 years, that would make Daniel, at the end of his life, somewhere in the neighborhood of 85, perhaps even 90 plus, an old man. Now, that's going to make what we're talking about tonight, I think, take on added significance as we think about Daniel in the lion's den. The text has been read in your hearing from chapter 6, beginning at verse 1 through verse 9. And as we think of this young captive, we see that he was quite successful. If you'll notice, beginning in the first three verses, it tells us that he was appointed one of three presidents. Now, this becomes important to us when we think about the responsibility that they had in the kingdom of Darius. When you look at these verses, in particular verse 1, it tells us that there were 120 satraps, or as Joey was reading a few moments ago, princes. My understanding of the responsibility that these had was somewhat like governors or even tax collectors, to make sure that the king was not hurt. In other words, that the income from his kingdom was not diminished. And as we note that there were 120 of these men, and then the king set three presidents over them. That tells us the responsibility of these men, and when you consider especially that Daniel was being considered in the last part of verse 3 to be set over the whole realm. In other words, the king is considering making Daniel second in command of all the kingdom. Now, that created a problem, did it not, for Daniel. Daniel had enemies. in Daniel chapter 6 in verse 4. It says, then the presidents and the satraps sought to find occasion against Daniel as touching the kingdom. But they could find no occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Here are a group of people over whom Daniel has responsibility. And they're determined that they're going to hurt Daniel. They're led by their own envy. We look, for example, at such characters as David. His son, Absalom, wanted to take the kingdom from his father, David. When we look at Jesus in the New Testament, Pilate knew that for envy they had delivered him up. Envy is a terrible thing. Envy is when, essentially, you want something that somebody else has, and you're determined to take it. Envy. Sometimes success leads to that. But the enemies of young David, or young Daniel, could find no fault in him. I find it interesting, the description that is given in verse 5, verse 4, that there was, no occasion nor fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault in him. Nothing they could accuse him of. Not anything regarding Daniel that they could find fault with. Now, you recall when Jesus was being interrogated by Pilate. Pilate said, I can find no fault in him. I can find nothing worthy of death. Well, that was like Daniel. There was nothing that they could accuse Daniel of because they recognized his faithfulness, except they find something concerning the law of his God. Well, what did they do? They persuaded King Darius to set forth a decree. And I want to call your attention to verse 7 or verse 6 because it says, then these presidents and satraps assembled together to the king and said unto him, let's pause right there. You know, sometimes when people want to hurt you, it's not something that they're determined to do individually. But if you can get a group gathered together, then we've got problems. We see in the New Testament a number of occasions, for example, as we look at the Lord. We see what some might refer to as mob violence. When we look at the Apostle Paul in the city of Athens, how that Demetrius stirred up the silversmiths. And then in Acts chapter 21, when Paul entered into the city, we note that those among the Jews stirred up the multitude. And so we see that here. We see several banding together to persuade the king to set forth this decree. You'll notice that again in verse 11. And then you'll notice it again in verse 15. How that individually they seem powerless. But they assemble themselves together and accomplish their purpose. In the text of verses 7 through verse 9, these individuals, including the counselors and the governors, they have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a strong interdict, that is, a decree. They want the king to write something out that they know that Daniel is going to transgress. And in verse 7 it continues, that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, their proposition is interesting. Unless they ask something of you, if they inquire of anybody else, they'll be punished. Now, they knew Daniel, and they knew what his practice was. And certainly they intended this as a challenge to Daniel's faith. But as you read in verse 10, it says, and when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, again, a very interesting point, the king sets forth this decree, and he signs it. And the practice among the Persians and the Medes was that once it's set into force, it cannot be altered. So now that it is signed, it's established in concrete. They cannot go back. But Daniel, knowing that the writing was signed, it tells us he went into his house. Now his windows were open in his chamber toward Jerusalem. And he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Let's look carefully at that statement. Daniel knows that the decree is in force. Daniel knows that it cannot be changed. But Daniel also has practiced since he was a youth, praying 3 times a day. 1 Kings chapter 8 tells us, consistent with what we read here, that he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day. Notice again in the text, he didn't close the windows. He was not ashamed of what he practiced. He was not ashamed to be caught praying unto his God. He prayed with thanksgiving, as we also see in verse 10. Interestingly enough, in verse 12 through verse 16, these who have persuaded the king to sign this document, seeking an occasion whereof they might accuse Daniel, they now have it. And in verse 12, it tells us, in verse 12, then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's interdict or decree. Hast thou not signed the decree that every man that shall make petition unto any god or man within 30 days save unto thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? Now, I want you to see how they approach this. They don't come running to the king, pointing a finger and saying, you know what Daniel did? They ask regarding the authority of the decree. Didn't you sign this decree? Now, once it's been established that, yes, this is set in concrete, this is what I said, this is what I signed. And then they said, O king, or the king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel. You see their disdain. That Daniel, who is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the interdict or the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. Now again, that's interesting. They charged Daniel with dishonoring the king. Here's the decree that you have signed, and Daniel's not subscribing to that. Daniel is calling upon his God 3 times a day. Now remember, Mr. King, you set that decree and it cannot be changed. But look at what Daniel is doing. Now what must the king do? In verse 16, let's pick up the reading there. It says, then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Again, I find that very interesting. The king, in order to honor the decree that he has signed, he cannot make an exception even for Daniel. And so he orders that Daniel be cast into the den of lions. Now we might reason and say, well, if Daniel was cast into the den of lions for an hour, then the king would have fulfilled the decree. But the king sets forth a seal upon the den of lions. And you'll notice that not only is it sealed with his own signet, but with the signet of his lords. In other words, not only do we have the stamp of approval that cannot be changed by the king, but also by his lords, so that we've got witnesses that Daniel will stay in the den of lions. But as you continue to read in this text, it tells us then in verse 18, then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting, neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. In the text, King Darius is hopeful that the God of Daniel will deliver him. In verse 16, the king said, "Thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." Just an interesting observation. The king knows the many years of faithfulness of Daniel unto God. And knowing this is evident from verse 4, where even we see those who want to accuse Daniel recognize that he is faithful and there is no error to be found in him. In verse 10, likewise, we noted the practice of Daniel is described as faithful. In verse 16, and again in verse 20, it's understood that Daniel is faithful to God and he serves God continually. And we need to be impressed with that as a young person or as an old person. Daniel's service to God was not hot and cold. It was not every once in a while. Daniel was continually faithful to God to the extent that many others had noticed it, even his enemies. Now, when we talk about the sealing of the den of lions, the purpose of that was that nothing be changed, that Daniel not be allowed out. You recall when Jesus was crucified and when he was placed in the sepulcher, it was sealed with the Roman seal because it had been heard that he had said that he would be raised from the dead. So they wanted to seal the tomb to assure that he would not. Same point being made here. The place where Daniel was sealed to assure that he would not escape and that he would be in the den of lions. Now in the text as it continues, in verse 19, I want you to look. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. Again, the observation that if the king placed Daniel in the den of lions, even for an hour, he would have fulfilled the decree that he leaves him there all night. To establish the decree, he did what he said that he would do. In Daniel chapter 6, as it continues in verse 20, and when he came near unto the den to Daniel, he cried with a lamentable voice. The king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel to the king, O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths, and they have not hurt me, for as much as before him innocency was found in me. And also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Then was the king exceeding glad, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he had trusted in his God. When we note the words of Daniel, when Daniel is approached by the king, in essence to say, did your God save you? In verse 21, Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. I want you to observe how that Daniel honors the king. He understands who this man is. O king, live forever. The king is not Daniel's enemy. The king has been caught in a trap. But the king is not Daniel's enemy. When we look back in Daniel chapter 6, in verse 6, these who have set forth to the king to make this decree, they also said, King Darius, live forever. Let me ask you, my friend, do they honor the king? Are they the king's friend? No, they don't care anything about the king. They just hate Daniel, and they want to hurt Daniel. You see, these presidents and princes or satraps, they're not the king's friend. But as Daniel reports in verse 22, my God has sent his angel. Well, that's the question that was asked by the king. Did your God, or was your God able to deliver you, whom you serve continually? And Daniel says, yes, sir. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths, and they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Daniel says, God has saved me. He sent his angel, and the lions' mouths were closed, and there is no hurt, there is no harm. Notice this next expression. Daniel's God is referred to as a living God. In verse 20, even the king acknowledges that. It says in verse 20, and when he came near unto the den to Daniel, he cried with a lamentable voice. In other words, he's very sad. The king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God able to save thee? In verse 26, the king says, I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is a living God. And the text tells us, steadfast forever. You see, King Darius has learned something about God. He's learned that in contrast to the gods that the Medes and the Persians served, Daniel continually serves a living God that could deliver him out of the mouths of the lions. Now why? In verse 5 it tells us, verse 23 it tells us, because he had trusted in his God. When you look back in verse 5, even regarding those who accused him, they said, we can't find any occasion against Daniel. Daniel trusted in God. His innocence and his trust in God is clearly proclaimed. Bob, here's the point we were talking about last night. In Daniel chapter 6, in verse 24, it tells us, and the king commanded, and they brought those men that had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions. Them, their children, and their wives, and the lions had the mastery over them, and break all their bones in pieces before they came to the bottom of the den. You know, the picture that's presented here is a simple one. These lions were hungry. And when these who proved themselves to be enemies of Daniel, when they were cast into the den of lions, they were mangled before they ever hit the bottom. So was the punishment upon them. You know, sometimes we pronounce our own judgment. These who were authorities, who were under Darius, who wanted Daniel dead, they have pronounced their own sentence. They want Daniel to be cast into the den of lions. And yet, these men are cast into the den of lions. The Old Testament book of Deuteronomy, if you'll turn to the 19th chapter, Deuteronomy chapter 19. Read with me beginning in verse 18. It says, and the judges shall make diligent inquisition, and behold, if the witness be a false witness and have testified falsely against his brother, then shall you do unto him as he had thought to do unto his brother. So shalt thou put away the evil from the midst of thee. In other words, that's what they thought to do to Daniel, and that's what happened to them. And we see a number of examples like that. You remember in the book of Esther, where Haman, who hated Mordecai, devised a plot where Mordecai was to be hanged. And yet we learn that Mordecai was vindicated and honored, and it was Haman that was hanged on his own gallows. And as we think about David, you recall after the sin that he had committed with Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite, Nathan the prophet came to him and painted the picture regarding a man who had one little ewe lamb, been like a daughter to him, ate at his table with him. And there was a rich man who had company come to visit and had flocks and herds, but rather than to take of his flock, he took that one little ewe lamb. that the man had. And he killed it, and he served it to his guest. And David was angry. And he said that a man that would do such a thing is worthy of death. And Nathan said, "Thou art the man." David had pronounced his own sentence. Nathan the prophet told him the things that would occur in his life as a result of the sin that he had committed. David writes somewhat concerning that. If you'll turn back to the Old Testament book of Psalms. In Psalms chapter 7. Psalms chapter 7. Read with me beginning in verse 14. There David says, "Behold, he travaileth with iniquity. Yea, he hath conceived mischief and brought forth falsehood. He hath made a pit and digged it and is fallen into the ditch which he made." Consequence. Continuing in verse 16, "His mischief shall return upon his own head, and his violence shall come down upon his own pate." What are we looking at? You do this, there's consequences. David understood that. In Proverbs chapter 1, reading in verse 10. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. David said, "My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, 'Come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privately for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as Sheol, and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance, we shall fill our houses with spoil. Thou shalt cast thy lot among us, we will all have one purse. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood, for in vain is the net spread in the sight of any bird, and these lay wait for their own blood, they lurk privately for their own lives, so are the ways of everyone that is greedy for gain, it taketh away the life of the owners thereof." You know what David is saying, or what Solomon is saying in Proverbs chapter 1? When folks come to you and they say, "Let's go and let's beat this guy up and take what he has, and we'll share it among us." The wisdom writer said, "Don't do that." You know why you ought not do that? Because what they have planned for that man, that's what ultimately is going to happen to them. So don't you do that. Well, we learn that here in Daniel chapter 6. These who have devised a plot for David, or Daniel, I keep saying David, for Daniel to be cast into the lion's den. That's where they are. And that's where they die. I want to call your attention to another thing in this text. In verse 24, "The king commanded, and they brought those men that had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions had the mastery over them and break all their bones in pieces before they came to the bottom of the den." You know, sometimes the things that we do, they don't just affect us. Sometimes the things that we do ripple and affect the lives of a whole lot of people. And young people, there's a lesson that we need to take home. When you make a choice that is not a good choice, it doesn't always just hurt you. Sometimes it hurts people that you love. Sometimes it may hurt people that you don't even know. But often it hurts a lot of people. I have on the board Joshua chapter 6 and 7. You remember when they came into the city of Jericho as the people of Israel began to conquer the promised land. And they were victorious over the city of Jericho. But as they came to the smaller city of Ai, they were not victorious. And the reason was that as they came through the city of Jericho, Achan took some of the things that God said, "They're mine." And when Achan's sin was discovered, Achan, his wife, his children, his animals, his tent, everything that he had was stoned, burned, and stoned. Now you think that Achan thought about that when he marched through the city of Jericho and took of those things that God said you can't have? It cost him. But it didn't just cost him his life. It cost him the lives of his wife, his children, everything that he had. You see, sometimes judgment goes way beyond just me. It affects a lot of people. In Daniel chapter 6, in verses 25 through 27, it tells us, "Then King Darius wrote unto all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and steadfast forever in his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." Through all of this, you see, God is exalted. You remember during the days of King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of the Babylonian Empire, in Daniel chapter 3, beginning in verse 4, King Nebuchadnezzar likewise signed a document or a decree and commanded that the sound of various instruments of music, that when the people heard these, they would bow down and worship the golden image which King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Now, if you don't do that, he said, you'll be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And it's there, young folks, that you've been studying about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. How that they would not do that. And they were asked, is it of purpose? In other words, maybe you've just accidentally overlooked this. And they said, we have no need to answer you. It doesn't matter. Our God can deliver us from the midst of the burning fiery furnace, and if not, we will not serve the God that you've set up. Won't do it. And they were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace, and God protected and delivered them. And when Nebuchadnezzar saw that and ordered that they come out, it tells us in verse 28 that he spake and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and have yielded their bodies that they might not worship or might not serve nor worship any god except their own God." And then in verse 29, he proclaims the greatness of God. Now, that's impressive, isn't it? The lesson that I want you to see, and that ultimately King Nebuchadnezzar learned and had to learn the hard way, is that it is God who rules, and he will not be overruled. And so it was during the days of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, when we look at verse 28 of this chapter, Daniel chapter 6, verse 28, "So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian." We know that Cyrus was the successor of Darius, and that extends the reign, or the position rather, of young Daniel, as we mentioned at the beginning of the lesson, to perhaps 90 plus years old. Now that's interesting. I don't quote from commentators very often, as most of you know. But sometimes a fellow says it just right. Here's a fellow that said, "So this Daniel prospered." He had served five kings: Nebuchadnezzar, Evil-Merodach, Belshazzar, Darius, and Cyrus. Few courtiers have had so long a reign, served so many masters without flattering any, been more successful in their management of public affairs, been so useful to the states where they were in office, or have been more owned of God, or have left such an example to posterity. I want you to think about that in application to Daniel. And what this writer is saying is, Daniel was not a politician, but he served in the courts of five men. And in serving in the courts of five men, he didn't favor any of them. But he served God and was faithful and continual in his service to God. And he benefited the kingdoms over which or in which he served. And he left an honorable example for any to follow. Now that says a lot about Daniel. Now when we think about Daniel, there are some lessons we want to take home with us. Number one, Daniel was without fault. He was without fault before God, and he was without fault concerning those that he served under. There was no place to accuse him. Secondly, Daniel was faithful to God throughout his life. He served God continually. He was committed to prayer. He did not give favor to men. He served God. The text tells us that even as he came out of the lion's den, he was delivered because he trusted God. But you know, when we think about lessons from Daniel in the lion's den, there are some lessons from this king that we don't want to miss. Number one, we want to see that this king made a very thoughtless decision. He didn't consider the consequences. He was approached by these who were in positions of political power, and they require that Darius sign this proclamation. And evidently, without thought of consequence, he put his name on it. Now what happened? When he found out that this applies to my good friend Daniel, the man that I am considering to make second in command over all the kingdom, it applies to Daniel. Let's go back and look at chapter 6, verse 14. It says, "Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to rescue him." King, sorry for what he said. Sorry for what he signed. But young people and old people alike, I want you to see that being sorry didn't fix it. Sometimes we're sorry for what we've done, but it doesn't remove the consequences. King Darius was very sore displeased with himself. You ever done something that was very disappointing to you? And as you reflected upon that, you were sorry that you did that. But it didn't change what you did. It didn't change the consequence. As the king looks at himself, he's the one that signed the proclamation. He can't point a finger at someone else. These who were in positions of political power who wanted to hurt Daniel, they asked the king to do that. They imposed this upon the king. But who put his signature on the paper? The king did. It's his responsibility. Nobody else to blame. You see, it's not a matter of blaming somebody. It's a matter of now of how do we fix it. And the king realizes there's not any way to fix it. He signed this thing. And now he's obligated to go through with it. As you drop down in the text to verse 18, it says, "Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep fled from him." I want you to look at this king. He's sorry, but he's in agony over what he has signed. Look at what I've done. There's not anybody else to blame. I can't eat. There's no pleasure in bringing instruments of music before me and playing those. I can't sleep. I've placed myself as a friend with these evil men who want to hurt Daniel, who's done nothing wrong. And then to look at all of that and realize there's nothing I can do. Nothing I can do. He labored all day into the night to try to find some way to release Daniel, and there was just no way that he could do that because he had signed this decree. He had been compelled to sign the death warrant of his good friend. Now, I want you to look at something here carefully, especially young people. Was it King Darius' intention to hurt Daniel when he signed this? He didn't aim to. It was the intention of those who set forth this decree for the king to sign. But it wasn't the king's intent to hurt Daniel. You ever do something that's wrong, that has consequences, that you didn't intend? And you say, well, I didn't intend for that to happen. Doesn't make any difference. Darius didn't intend to hurt Daniel, but because he signed that thing, he was obligated to put Daniel into the den of lions. Now, friend, we need to be careful, not only about what we intend, but to look just a little bit ahead and examine the consequences of what we do now. When I was growing up, the expression was quite popular in our house, look before you leap. Look at some of the consequences that may lay ahead before you make this decision now. And Darius didn't do that. So he made a very poor decision that resulted in some very severe consequences. Now we look at this and we say, well, it turned out good for Daniel. Well, it did turn out good for Daniel. But it wasn't because of anything that the king did. And it certainly was not because of anything that those who were fellow politicians with Daniel did. It was based upon Daniel's loyalty and faithfulness to God throughout a lifetime of perhaps 80, 85 years that we know of during this period of captivity. Now that's our study. Perhaps something has been said that will help us grow and be faithful to the Lord. From Daniel chapter 6. Daniel in the lion's den. You see, it's not just beneficial to young people, is it? But for young and old alike, there are many valuable lessons. Listen patiently. Perhaps I'm talking to someone who needs to obey the gospel tonight. Perhaps your heart is pricked and it's your desire to do something about sin. God did everything that He can do. He sent His Son. Jesus came and did everything that He could do, even to the offering of His life, that you might be saved. He calls upon you to believe that He is the Christ and that He did that in order that you might be forgiven. Would it be your desire this evening to repent of your sin, confess your faith, and be baptized into Christ that you might be forgiven? Maybe you've done that, and you're not a faithful servant of God. You're not like Daniel. But you need to fix that, beloved. You can fix it tonight. If we can pray with you and for you to that end, please come to the front while we stand and sing this song.